Greetings to Coma. John Doherty here once again with KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, and always respectfully. And as I've commented in the past, the reason we're respectful is not because simply it's the right thing to do. It's because that's really the only way for us to be able to communicate with each other over our very wide spectrum of opinions on climate and, frankly, just about everything else. So always respectful in this conversation and others. So speaking of conversations, I recently had a conversation with a friend about the topic of where to invest our money, our savings, our retirement plan, and the issue of socially responsible investments came up. And okay, I brought up the subject. Should we be investing in firms that we believe are maybe destructive to us as a society or not? And of course, me being a climate guy, I was focused on, well, should we be investing in companies that are pumping billions of tons of carbon dioxide out into the atmosphere on a daily basis, or at least providing the world with the fuels that result in those carbon dioxide emissions, or not? Should we be investing in those folks or not? And aside from just the global warming issue, of course, is the issue of toxicity from those carbon emissions that are affecting mostly folks on the bottom end of the economic scale, folks who live near freeways and industrial facilities. So from my perspective, kind of a contradiction in terms, if I were to be advocating for a cleaner, healthier environment, and at the same time be investing in industries that are creating those problems. My friend's response was pretty straightforward, and I gotta say, understandable. Basically, what he said was, my little nest egg is not going to make a lot of difference to the future of the Earth or to any of these fossil fuel companies. My stance is pretty much, well, I'm going to do what I can to invest wisely and just enjoy my life and not worry about climate change or anything else. Well, the shorthand for that approach is the drop in the bucket perception, i.e., anything that I do is so tiny and insignificant compared to the magnitude of the problem that it just doesn't make any difference. And if me doing something does make any difference, then why should I bother doing it? It's pretty bulletproof in a way, and I certainly think that, feel that myself. Yet I look around and I do stuff that is just a drop in the bucket. I voted in the recent election. I have a little package I give out to homeless people at the intersection with the cardboard signs. So with all respect to my friend, and in my own humility, I gotta say that as we all approach the question of, are we just a drop in the bucket? And if we are, then what should we do? It becomes an ethical choice of whether we want to be part of the solution to a problem or whether we just want to be a contributor to the problem. So let's be real here. Facing the climate change issue and related environmental issues, that is the choice. Are we going to be part of the solution? Are we part of the problem? Nobody gets a free ride here. So a big part of it for me is that I feel an obligation around this. I feel obligated to do what I can to create a healthy environmental future in relationship to climate change and toxicity. I feel the obligation to future Earth inhabitants. I can imagine somebody in the future saying to the long departed me, and I'm quoting here from this make-believe person, you mean you could have seen what was happening and why it was happening, and you knew what to do about it, yet you didn't do anything about it. Or worse, you participated in the environmental catastrophe because it was the easiest thing to do. So knowing that that's real, and we know it's real in part because that's already happened with environmentally damaging things we've done in the past, people who have paid the price for it, with disease or starvation or destruction from an exploding chemical plant. There were known problems, but nobody did anything about them because to do something about them was a problem. So I know this is going to sound harsh, but I do believe it's true, and that is folks who say, well, I'm just the drop in the bucket, isn't really what's going on there, is that they've figured out a way of avoiding responsibility, of getting off the hook for the consequences of their own behavior. Let's be totally clear here. The problems we face in terms of our environment are huge, and the tentacles go everywhere. Just as a quick aside, you may have seen recent news reports regarding a known phenomenon where the coho salmon coming back into the Puget Sound to their spawning grounds are dying as they get around urban areas. And it turns out that after years of research, scientists have discovered that the cause for those deaths amongst the coho is a chemical that's used in the manufacture of tires. Tires wear out, they leave dust on the road, that dust gets washed into the storm drains, the drains drain into the Puget Sound, the fish live with those toxins, that specific toxin, and they die. So we have these very large, very demanding, very problematic issues with our environment. And the simple matter is, if we all take the approach that I'm just a drop in the bucket, then we are not going to address the problem. And we'll contribute to things being worse. There is another answer to the drop in the bucket issue. And I'm going to quote here from somebody talking about this subject. And this person said, I'm quoting, "I remember overhearing a caller to a radio show who asked the presenter what they could do as one individual to make a difference in the global climate crisis. I love the respondent's answer. The one thing you can do is to stop being an individual. You have to join and work with others." And that's been one of my ongoing themes is, yes, we are limited in what we can do in individuals, but let's just be sure that we understand that we're limited. It doesn't mean we can't do anything. And I do believe that those steps that we do take as individuals do make a difference. They make a difference in the respect that we are reducing our own carbon footprint and we are influencing others with our behavior. But yes, it is a very tiny thing. And any one of us could say, well, if I don't do anything, it's not going to change the outcome. And that can be true. But it's also very clear that joining with other like-minded people is really the way to get culture to change. So I'm thinking about some of the major issues in the past, like the abolitionists. They certainly started out with individuals, and those individuals were drops in the bucket, but they managed to join with other individuals, and eventually slavery in our country was abolished. How about the suffragists? Same thing. Drops in the bucket turned out to be more than just drops when people started joining together with a common goal of getting the vote for women. And even closer historically to now, the civil rights movement. I wasn't there for them, but I got to believe that there were people a long time ago who were just individuals, but in conversations with others, started forming organizations working towards a fairer, more just society. And as a result, we got the civil rights legislation of the 60s with the differences that those made. And those three examples I gave, those were major, massive changes in the way our society did business. So it only happened because people who started out as drops in the bucket joined with other people, formed political movements. And that's really what we've got to be doing with the environment in general and climate change in particular. And there are all kinds of organizations that can be joined. And I've got to say, joining is a step in the right direction, but from there, we all need to be taking action. We need to be doing stuff. We need to be demonstrating. We need to be talking to our elected representatives. We need to be encouraging other people to vote, all of which can be done through organizations. Organizations that exist right now, effective organizations, hardworking organizations with solid, enlightened leadership. And let's be clear also, the way things are right now, most people do consider themselves just a drop in the bucket, and they're not willing to undertake that kind of effort, even if they see what the problem is. And I'm setting aside completely the folks that either can't or refuse to see how things are. And so this brings me to the point of optimism versus pessimism. The group of folks I'm active with talk about being optimistic all the time. As in, we need to be optimistic because people don't want to hear a pessimistic message, which basically is true. But let's just for a second do a little mind experiment. imagine a car is going down the highway 60 miles an hour, and there's a bridge out over the canyon up ahead that the drivers in the car don't know about, and you know that that is a problem. You grab your cell phone, you call them up and tell them, hey, there's a bridge out up ahead, and if you don't change what you're doing, it's going to be a catastrophe. Is that a pessimistic or an optimistic statement? I would say it's driven by optimism, the optimism that by doing something, by doing the right thing, we can make things better. We could have a phony optimism. They'll be all right. They'll probably figure it out on their own. Maybe it won't be so far down to the bottom of the canyon, etc. That's really a false optimism. And I think that we can make the same claims about our attitude towards climate. I would rather have a person who recognizes the problem, sees the impending catastrophe, has the willingness to call it what it is, and is willing to go to work to avert the possible catastrophic outcome. To me, that is true optimism. To avoid the catastrophe, to avoid the slow motion train wreck that we are riding in at this very moment, we need to be objectively looking and we need to be willing to call out what's happening, and we need to be willing to call for actions that avert the catastrophe. That's optimism in action. So part of my message today is I am calling on you to be optimistic in your actions. So a quick segue here, talking about actions. There's a psychologist who focuses in on the emotions associated with a recognition of what's going on environmentally. Her name is Leslie Davenport. She's right here in good old Tacoma, Washington. You can find her on the World Wide Web if you want to take a look at some of the work she's done. She's a published author and a person that I have a great deal of respect for. Leslie and I are going to be collaborating on a continuing education course at the Tacoma Community College. It's going to be offered online. It will be spring quarter, so asking you to watch for the circular that comes out from Tacoma Community College with each quarter, and look for that course, and we'd love to have you participate in it. Okay, and further segue in terms of participating, I would love to hear from you. You can send me an email to John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org, and I'll read every email, and I will certainly respond to your email as appropriate on the air. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. There are program notes associated with this program. You can go to ccltacoma.org, and you can find the document that I made reference to a little earlier, 100 ways that you can reduce your own footprint and that you can be part of avoiding the impending catastrophe of climate change, global warming, and all the aspects of that. So that's it for today. I'll be signing off now. Optimistically yours, John Doherty. And remember, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care.